I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
How has GB News impacted British politics? Is woke capitalism a threat to the West? To discuss, I'm joined by Mark Stolson, the CEO of Legatum, a powerful investment firm with interests in GB News and other major projects. How is Legatum trying to influence British politics?
Well, Legatum is not trying to influence British politics at all. So Legatum, I mean, to understand Legatum, you have to understand the people behind Legatum, because it's not really an organization. It's more of just a group of people that are united by a common mission. So Legatum started about 20 years ago with four partners who are still in place today, four partners that had worked together for several years in an investment organization, and basically, at a moment in time, decided to strike out on their own, create their own firm, but one that had a distinct purpose at the center of it. And the purpose was articulated in a mission statement that has survived for 20 years. And the mission of Legatum is to generate capital, that's through the investment business, but then use our capital to help others prosper. So that's what drives Legatum. It's not politics, it's anything that will help people prosper.
And politics is a vehicle for that, no? Isn't the whole point of politics for many people to help people prosper?
I don't see how
you can separate the two ideas.
The way that Legatum thinks about it is, you know, we want to use our capital to help people prosper in whatever way is most effective. Let me give you an example of something that we have done. So about 15 years ago, we were, you know, reading the Financial Times, an article by a guy called Andrew Jack. And, you know, what we read in this article was that 1.5 million people, 1.5 billion people, have some form of intestinal worms. So intestinal worms will kill you. They will keep kids out of school. They can cause you, you know, to go blind, can cause you to be lame. The other thing that we found, though, was that you can treat intestinal worms for about 50 cents per treatment. So being investors, we looked at it as kind of a mathematical problem and sort of an interesting, complex problem to solve. And we realized if you could crack this issue, it could change millions, billions of people's lives in our lifetime. That started us on a journey that has lasted 15 years with, at first, treating 8 million people a year in two African countries, just to prove a model to figure out, can we actually use our capital, partner with many, many people on the ground, and see significant change in people's lives. After we had proven the model, we saw the disease prevalence in Rwanda and Burundi go down from sort of the 80%, 70%, down to single digits.
You've given a great list of things that Legatum has done, but perhaps what it's best known for in the UK is investing in GB News and the Legatum Institute, which is your think tank, and as you say, you're talking about ideas. Why did Legatum choose to invest in GB News?
Well, as an investment organization, we're always looking for great investment ideas, great projects, great people that we think can really move the needle, whether it's in commerce or trade or in the world of ideas. And so the investment in GB News really found us rather than us finding it. And the idea that was presented to us was that we hadn't seen a new broadcast news channel in this country for, I think, 30 years. And, you know, again, what was presented to us was that there was a tremendous number of people that felt underserved by sort of the establishment media in this country. So rather than taking that at face value, we did our own research, which is what investors do. What we found was that it was totally true, was that there were, by our calculations, tens of millions of people that felt like they weren't connecting with and they weren't being served by, you know, the other sort of mainstream broadcast news channels. So we allocated capital behind this idea. We thought it was audacious. We thought it was bold. We thought it was risky. But we were willing to put our capital and actually put our shoulder to the plow and actually put some effort behind it as well. So, yeah, that's why we invested in GB News. And it has been a fascinating journey. It was bumpy at the beginning. Some mistakes were made. But I'm really proud of how the channel has cleaned itself up and has configured itself for, hopefully, a very successful future.
How do you assess its impact so far?
Well, I think the numbers speak for themselves. Again, we look at things through this investor's lens. And so we're intrigued by anything that can give us some handle on metrics, on ways that we can measure its success. One of them is obviously audience. The audience is growing. It's Britain's fastest growing news media property. It's had over 1 billion YouTube views. That's not bad for something that's less than 3 years old. Let's see. In terms of news websites in the UK, GB News is now in the top 15. It's actually number 13. Do you know what number 12 is? The Telegraph.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Watch your back. So it's done really well. I mean, even in radio. Radio was, for us, was an afterthought. We were looking at broadcast, you know, over linear and then over digital. But radio was an easy sort of bolt-on for us. And today, the GB News radio channel is number one in the 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. slot. So for something that just was an insurgent, bootstrappy startup kind of venture, it's done an amazing job in the last 3 years.
Now, as you say, it wasn't insurgent. Do you think it's changed the media landscape in Britain itself?
So we do believe that. So the way that landscape is measured by some is this thing called the Overton window. And we don't just try to guess. We actually have people that are looking at that full time using computers to analyze every spoken word on the BBC, on Sky, on ITV, just to try to assess, is the GB News conversation changing the broader national conversation? We've got data to support that, yes.
There's been lots of controversies around the channel from other mainstream news organizations, or there's been a lot of criticism, I should say, particularly even some MPs and other journalists calling for the channel to be shut down after various controversies from comments from certain presenters and things like that. Mm. And they also say GB News peddles conspiracy theories and disinformation, and there's a whole chorus of censorship around that channel since it's been launched. How do you assess or what do you make of these calls for GB News to be shut down or censored?
From an investor's perspective, GB News is here to stay. So it has the funding that it needs, it's got the mission that it needs, and it's got the audience. I think whenever we have sort of a down day or we feel like we're being attacked at all sides, something that I find fun and encouraging is just reading the letters that come in from viewers. We have people that are sending in like £5 notes, you know, or sending in a check for £10, who are writing, you know, you've completely changed my viewing habits, you know, please never leave. They love the presenters. So when you feel like you're connecting with the audience in a way that's making a difference in their lives, then we're actually fulfilling the original mission of GB News. And it's encouraging. I guess just in contrast with other channels that get subsidized by the state, GB News has its audience trying to subsidize us. So to me, that tells us that we've got a significant draw and we've got a big population to serve.
But do you take the point that there have been some mistakes that the channel has made, particularly from an editorial perspective, when you have certain presenters, as I said, make comments, I'm thinking of Lawrence Fox, for example, where he said something rather silly about a female journalist, and obviously he was forced out after that. And do you take the point that GB News has made mistakes in the past?
Absolutely. I mean, unquestionably, mistakes have been made, but you have to put it into context. GB News is a startup. And as any investor in any company knows, mistakes are always made because we're human. And especially when you're trying to do something new, and when you're creating something from a PowerPoint presentation to broadcasting 6,000 hours a year, you're going to make mistakes. It's inevitable. What I do find encouraging is how the channel has handled them. And so you raised the issue of Lawrence Fox. From a Legatum perspective, with our overarching goal to promote prosperity, we want to see debate. We want to see freedom of speech. But we'd also like to see an elevated discourse. We don't want to see ad hominem attacks. We don't want to see people rubbishing other people. And our contention is that the audience really doesn't want to see that either. So it's not only not good for our own corporate culture, we don't think it's good for business. And so in this one particular situation that you raised, I was very encouraged by how the channel dealt with it swiftly, and dealt with it fully, and it seems to be a non-issue.
But there have been people who've said, well, actually, GB News is meant to be a channel of freedom of speech, and that this was a case of GB News censoring their presenters. How do you respond to that argument?
Well, I mean, it definitely is the channel for freedom of speech. But any company that has 300 employees and that's operating within a regulated environment needs to have certain boundaries and certain rules that apply to everyone. And so just like any other company, if you operate outside of those boundaries, there will be consequences.
In the UK this year, we've got a general election coming up, of which Labour is highly likely to win that election if you look at the opinion polls. Are you concerned as an investor at Legatum that Labour could introduce new legislation which could make GB News or could make life for GB News very hard? And there's some people even saying that GB News might not even last through a Labour government if they introduce new Ofcom regulations which might tighten the restrictions around what can and cannot be said on live TV.
So that's probably a better question for the management of GB News as they think through how to position the channel. As an investor, I'm not concerned at all, because what I'm seeing is what you're seeing, is that on GB News, on the channel, you have people from both sides of the aisle. You have Tories, conservatives, you have Labour MPs and folks talking as well. And so, and that's the whole point of GB News. The parent company of GB News is called All Perspectives Limited. And we called it that for a reason, because we do want all perspectives. The whole ethos of the channel from its genesis was to provide a plurality of views, to welcome debate. And so I would think that Labour would welcome that as well. And they're already voting with their feet. They're showing up on the channel. GB News has a very, very strong audience, a very strong sort of buy-in from people in this so-called red wall part of the country. That's a really important demographic for both parties. And so if that demographic, if that cohort of people tune into GB News, it would seem to be sort of self-help to be on the channel and be speaking to those people.
Now, the channel is yet to make a profit. It's only been a few years, so I think anyone would expect that. However, of course, as an investor, presumably you would be looking to see GB News being a very profitable company. Are you concerned about the sort of losses at the moment? Because I think there was £30 million of losses reported in the last time when the financial reports came out.
Right,
whatever.
Right.
So you're very insistent that there is a future for GB News. Can you just comment a bit on that, the sort of the profit, the losses, and the advertising boycott that GB News has had to go through past these years?
Well, clearly any investor is going to want to look at profit and losses. The question is duration and time frame. And we're playing a long game here, and we knew that from the outset. We knew that this wouldn't be an overnight success. And we also knew that we were bringing something entirely new to the market that would shake it up a bit, and so we anticipated some opposition. GB News itself has what it calls a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal. And their big, hairy, audacious goal is to be the number one news channel in the UK by 2028. I reckon as an investor that if they accomplish that goal, it will not just be profitable, but it'll be very, very valuable.
From a sort of principled point of view as an investor, obviously Legatum very much thinks about its values, and you have an aim other than profit in your mind. And it sounds like with GB News, it's an idea. It's about, as you say, it's being a disruptor, it's providing all perspectives, it's creating a new sort of channel, as you say, for the first time in 30 years. So there was very much a reason behind it other than making money. Do you think that is a principle in capitalism. Values are important for investment funds.
Absolutely. I mean, values, you know, when you look at investing in a company, what are you investing in really? You're investing in people. I mean, a company can have assets, it can have products, it can have services, but fundamentally, especially as a long-term investor like Legatum, you are entrusting your capital to people who will steward your capital and steward the company. That's the way that we think about it. And so values and the character of leadership is incredibly important, and not just in companies, but in all positions of leadership, national leadership, political leadership, commercial leadership. So values incredibly important. I mean, one of the things that we're launching later this year is Legatum, together with Oxford University and Harvard University, are launching a leadership course. And it's focused on not just values, but virtues, the virtues that underpin what we see to be the type of leadership that can create value that will last over the long term. And so you might think, oh, that's courage, or it's honesty, it's all of that. But we've boiled it down to just a few basic virtues, which include hope, which include faith, and also include love, which sounds very strange in a corporate context. But what's the point? The point is that leaders who actually deeply care about the people that they're leading will do the right thing, and they'll do it consistently. Leaders that actually have faith and hope for the future will think long-term, and not about just the next election cycle, or not about just the next quarter's earnings. That's the type of leadership that Legatum is attracted to. It's the type of leadership that we want to back.
The reason I asked about values is because there have been much controversies around so-called woke capitalism in recent years, where companies, particularly with things like ESG, and companies are deciding to make decisions based on kind of woke ideas and perspectives around race and gender and identity politics. Do you think that this is a concern generally around the Western world, where companies, instead of focusing on profit and sort of people in that sense, because profit helps people, instead they're focusing on these new critical race theory ideas that may be skewing the entire kind of market economy?
So Legatum has a 20-year history, and we have a 40-year heritage. Our investment style is, the simplest way to describe it is basically just like Warren Buffett. It's long-term, it's buy and hold, we don't use any leverage, we're not trading in and out of markets. We're looking for great companies that are led by great people, great teams. And with that long-term perspective, one thing that absolutely matters is the G. part of ESG. It's governance, it's ethics, it's, you know, having people that have that sort of exhibit the virtues that I was talking about earlier. So our view of companies is probably a little old school, is that companies are there to serve. And the most successful companies are the companies that serve the most. They create the best products, they create the best services. We, as the population, we vote. We vote with our pounds. We vote with our dollars every day. We buy the iPhone. We buy the coffee. We're voting with our money for the things that serve us the best or the most. So our view is that companies that take that posture of like, how can we serve our customers? How can we serve our audience the absolute best? Those are the best companies to invest in without getting distracted and getting kind of off course on their core mission.
Do you agree that there are concerns where values become more important than other standards of which companies should value themselves by? So I'll give you an example. In America, this obsession with everything having to be diverse, and they have all population, all sort of companies must represent the population at large, and there must be quotas for female people or for ethnic minorities and so on. And you might even start to have movements to lower standards in order to enable ethnic diversity within different companies. And one place where people were saying, well, this could have a real big impact on people's lives is in air traffic control or, for example, training pilots in America.
As investors, we want to invest in companies that are run by virtuous people and who are hiring the best possible people for the job. And I think that's extremely normal. And it's a winning investment strategy as well. And so while, you know, our focus is not on the types of issues that you just set out, Absolutely, as investors, and not just investors and companies, but when we're using our capital to back philanthropic efforts as well, absolutely, we're looking at the leadership and we're looking at how they make decisions. And because we value the virtue of service and of looking after other people, we want to find leaders who are going to strike the right balance between ensuring that they're meeting their customers' needs and surprising and delighting the population that they serve, but also taking care of their people. Those two things are not in conflict. They absolutely go together. And so again, these can be quite nuanced issues in some cases, but you know, boiling it down, absolutely, we want to find leaders who are putting their customers first, putting their people first, and that's kind of being the overarching value beyond, you know, other sort of, you know, sort of political issues of the day.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Because Legatum has invested in GB News and because of the Legatum Institute itself, the think tank that's part of your organisation, there has been some, I would say, conspiracy theories around your organisation in Britain, particularly from the left, who are very suspicious of Legatum. You're based in Dubai, and in Parliament, a Conservative MP raised concerns around your founder, Christopher Chandler. He claimed that there were links between your founder and the Russian intelligence services. Obviously, he very much denies that that's the case. Can you comment on some of these, I would call conspiracies, but other people might say are legitimate concerns?
Well, with that specific issue, not only was it completely and totally false in fact, it's now completely and totally false in law. So a recent development is that a U.S. federal district court has found that those allegations are so untrue, they're so completely untrue that no reasonable jury could find otherwise. And so he's found as a matter of law that Christopher Chandler was defamed by the statements that were made and by the sort of the underlying spurious information that was put forward. And so that is it now, a non-issue. There's no newspaper, there's no mainstream or normal publication that would ascribe to that. In fact, everyone has distanced themselves from it because they realize it's complete rubbish. And so, I'm waiting for the day when those MPs actually do the right thing and stand up on the floor of the House of Commons and retract their comments. Chris Bryant, one of the people that originally had sort of attached himself to these comments, has done the right thing and distanced himself from them and said he realizes they've been completely disproved. So on that issue, it's a non-issue. In terms of, you know, people wondering who Legatum is and where we're from, I'm right here. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're doing this, is that Legatum really is, it's these four partners, two of whom are British. I come from Arizona. Our other partner comes from New Zealand. Over half of our team is British. We've got offices in London and Mayfair and in Dubai. And so, you know, we're easy to find and we write extensively on our website. We publish a lot. And so hopefully stepping out in public will help show the human face of Legatum, and we're happy to engage.
Now, I do want to ask a bit about politics, and I know that Legatum, as you said at the start of this interview, isn't particularly interested in influencing politics. However, in Britain, as I said, we've got this general election coming up. Obviously, in America, there's another election there. And it's an interesting time for conservatives around the world and around the West. And I wanted to ask whether Legatum was involved with or wanted to be involved with the future of conservative politics in Britain, particularly through things like the Legatum Institute and, to a lesser extent, I suppose, GB News. there are many people who are saying Conservatives are going to lose the election in later this year in the UK, and there'll be a rebuilding of that party, or perhaps even a new party coming around to sort of rebuild the Conservative movement in Britain. And that will involve thinking about ideas, and I know Legatum likes to think about ideas. So how is Legatum going to get involved in that, if at all?
So we will not be involved at all in terms of local politics. When we think about, you think about politics of the future, we think of maybe back to the future. So something that Legatum is intrigued by and something that the Legatum Institute is working on right now is just going back and looking at conservative, small c conservatism, the underlying philosophy, the underlying beliefs that led to values, and the values that led to virtues, and the virtues that led to institutions, all of which flowed into a very, very prosperous society, and one that we think is a gift to the world. So when we look at nations today and question, like, what can we do that can help countries, help nations prosper in the future, part of it is going back and asking, what were those values? What were those original beliefs and values and virtues that seem to provide a foundation for the prosperity that we all enjoy today? I think it's sort of long overdue. It feels like we're going down ancient paths to rediscover what small c conservatism really is. And it begs this really important question, which is, what is worth conserving? And when you put it that way, you realize, wow, there are parts of this country that are absolutely, and in any country, that are worth preserving, because they're fundamental to the national identity. They're fundamental to who we are as a people. You know, when I drive around London and people stop at zebra crossings or people queue, why are they doing that? They're doing it because that's what we do in this country. But the deeper roots of that are actually grounded in something very solid about what's right, what's fair, what's polite, and all of these values that animate a nation and a culture that has been really prosperous. So while we won't be directly involved in any sort of politics or campaigns or anything like that, obviously that affects us as just human beings and citizens. But from a longer term perspective, we are really interested in what are the core drivers of prosperity. Now, one of the core things that the Legatum Institute has done for 15 years is called the Legatum Prosperity Index. So we started it in some ways just as our own exploration, just to figure out what prosperity even means. You know, when we, 20 years ago, said we want to help others prosper, we had to break out the dictionary and ask, what does prosperity even mean? What we found is that prosperity means more than money. It has a very nuanced and a very sort of multifaceted definition. And it means money for sure, but it also means opportunity. It means quality of life. It means like everything that you want for your children, that's what prosperity means. So as we started to unpack it, we actually went to Oxford and asked a handful of professors to help us kind of unpack the word prosperity and what drives prosperity and then put it back together again. And that was the genesis of this prosperity index. Over time, it became much more sophisticated and has, dozens and dozens of different data points and factors and regression analyses to come up with this global index that ranks countries on the basis of holistic prosperity, wealth, and well-being. And while that's incredibly useful and helpful, we now want to go further, go deeper in terms of like what are the belief systems that actually appear to be required for a nation to prosper over the long term.
You talk about prosperity, and in Britain and in parts of America over the last 20 years, many people haven't seen prosperity. They've seen their wages stagnate with deindustrialization and so on, and globalization. There's been a huge rise in wealth and prosperity for many, many people around the world, particularly through immigration and things like that, coming into Western countries and raising those people's wages and living standards and so on. And obviously in Africa and other places where you've been involved, prosperity has risen in immeasurable ways. You know, you can see, as you say, things like health and so on. However, as I said, in Britain and America, there has been, I think, a stagnation in many parts of those countries, particularly perhaps even in other Western countries. And These economic trends potentially, some argue, led to things like the Brexit vote or the vote for Donald Trump in 2016. And these underlying trends haven't gone away, I don't think, in the last 4 or 5 years. How do you assess this stagnation in prosperity in some Western countries for some groups of people? Well, you talked about the Red Wall earlier. In America, they call it the Rust Belt, for example.
I saw a data point recently that said that the per capita GDP of Mississippi, which is the poorest state in the United States, is higher than the UK. And to me, that's very, very alarming. What's the solution? Again, if you're focused on prosperity, it's what has always driven prosperity. It's opportunity. It's jobs. It's letting people keep more of their incomes. It's freedom. It's these basic drivers of prosperity. So while the Legatum Institute happens to be located in London in the UK, we are focused, at least half of our focus is international, but we're in the UK, and so we feel like if we can use the tools that we have to help this country prosper and advocate for homeownership, higher income, growth, economic growth, does actually raise, like lift all boats. And so anything that we, like one of our someone that we've worked with for a long time is Lord Matthew Elliott, and he has started a new foundation called the Jobs Foundation. And it's very exciting because it exists to make one simple argument, which is that business is a force for good. Business creates jobs. It creates opportunities. It lifts families and communities. These are basic things, and they're very, very well known. And empirically, they're the things that drive prosperity. So those types of things, you'll find Legatum involved in anything that has to do with growth that can affect normal families.
And you talk about things like home ownership and so on, and GDP per capita. Now, interestingly enough, Britain has seen a huge increase in immigration in the last few years, particularly the last 20 years or so. In 2022, 745,000 people came to Britain, net 1.2 million gross. This was more than the entirety of the amount of people who came to Britain between 1980 and 2000. The cultural impact of that, I think, is hugely significant. You talked about Britain being a high-trust society in some ways, the zebra crossings, the queues, and so on. And there are people who say, well, we're losing the character of our nation through importing masses of people from other cultures who don't perhaps respect the British way of life, the British history, the British culture. So that's one thing. And then on the side of prosperity, you talk about home ownership. How can I own a home when the demand for houses has gone up so much in the last few years? And particularly, we're not building enough houses as well. So it's supply and demand, isn't it? It's a very basic economic calculation. How do you assess immigration into Britain?
Yeah. I mean, if you grew up in America, and it's sort of in my era, in my age, you were raised to be very pro-immigrant. Why is that? Because everyone is an immigrant. So my family came from Scotland, came from Norway. And so you have a heart for immigrants and for people who are coming to look for a new life. Today, I think the way that we would look at immigration is immigration can be very good. Uncontrolled or unlimited immigration has significant downsides. I haven't yet come across anyone who's a huge advocate for uncontrolled immigration. But the way that Legatum would look at the issue is probably through two different angles. One is, as you said, just on the cultural side, assimilation. Is while welcoming immigrants and while being a nation that is kind and a nation that is generous, how do we do that while at the same time respecting the citizens of that nation and respecting the history and the national identity and the culture of that nation? In fact, I mean, I guess it's common sense, but the reason that people want to come to certain countries is because they think life will be better there. So shouldn't we do our best to preserve that life that they're coming there in the first place? The second angle that we would use to look at the issue of immigration is really on the immigrant. And with large uncontrolled amounts of immigration, there can be totally unintended and very negative consequences for human beings that are crossing borders. And so, you know, one of the other major charities that Legatum co-founded is called the Freedom Fund, and it's focused on anti-trafficking and anti-modern-day slavery. And when you get into that space, you realize the human suffering and toll that can happen on people that are trafficked against their will, held in some form of bondage. I mean, the Freedom Fund has delivered over 30,000 people out of modern day slavery and affected lives in the millions in terms of just awareness campaigns and capacity building. And so we would look at the issue of immigration with a soft heart, but a hard head, and you know, would hope that people in political leadership wouldn't turn a blind eye to uncontrolled immigration.
What about these other broader cultural shifts that have happened in Western nations in recent years? I'm particularly thinking about the rise of so-called wokeism and other identity-based movements that have seemed to have infiltrated across all sorts of establishments in Britain and America, whether it's through the news media or through the university sector or through big corporations. I talked about kind of woke capitalism earlier. Are you concerned about threats to civilization from that perspective?
Well, I mean, looking at the history of the United States and the UK, it's these nations are strongest when they're cohesive, when there's social cohesion, when there's a sense of national unity. And oftentimes you find that in times of crisis, but also in times of national mourning or national celebration. I mean, just looking at the Queen's funeral, for example, here, like, it's incredibly stirring to see, you know, tens of thousands, millions of people out on the streets, like, displaying their affiliation, their affection for these totems of this nation, of the flag and of the Queen. And so it's the same in the United States. There are certain cultural totems that help us cohere, help us stay together as a nation. So any nation that's divided, just like any house that's divided, is going to be at risk. And so, you know, ideologies that threaten social cohesion, ideologies that bring division rather than unity, I think are very unhelpful.
Are you broadly pessimistic or optimistic about the future of Western nations, particularly looking at America and Britain?
Legatum is an investment organization. We're investors. We are, by definition, optimistic. We have to be, because we're looking at things in the long term. Britain has been around for over 1,000 years, and we have a great faith in human beings' ability to adapt, to change, to self-correct. So absolutely, we're optimists and we're hopeful.
Looking to America, we've talked a lot about Britain in this interview, but I just want to briefly talk about America, your home country. The president recently was accused by a prosecutor of having a bad memory, and he couldn't remember when he was vice president. He couldn't remember when his own son died in an interview with this prosecutor. And many people have raised concerns about Biden's mental faculties over the last few years, in particular looking at him making these speeches, making these kind of gaffes. Do you worry for the future of the United States when their president seems to be aging in this way?
Well, I think they see my previous response. I don't, long term, I do not worry about the United States. I feel like the United States has a long history of adaptation and self-correction. So the U.S. will be fine. And I remain very, very hopeful. So, but in terms of these, you know, current political issues, they're so well discussed, probably over discussed. So I don't think I have anything to add.
You talk about, I don't want to accuse you of complacency, but empires do fall. And, you know, you look at Rome, look throughout history. There's even some people who have this idea that every 250 years an empire, that's kind of the kind of expiration date of lots of empires. And America does seem to be on the decline in terms of its global position relative to places like China and so on. We've talked about the cultural impacts of what's happening in the United States. Perhaps the economy is stronger than it looks on the outset, and maybe you can comment on that. But do you think that you could perhaps be accused of being complacent when you look at these things saying, oh, America's fine, in the long term everything will sort of work itself out, when throughout history this hasn't always been the case? It can look in the contemporary through a contemporary lens that something is very, very powerful, very, very strong, and only within a few generations that whole system can collapse and crumble.
Well, I mean, Legatum is putting our money where our mouth is. So we're literally deploying capital into companies and into markets in faith and in hope that things will continue to get better. When it comes to the United States or the UK, or really around the world, I think we're incredibly encouraged by, as investors, interacting with entrepreneurs. I mean, if you want to increase your hope quotient, spend some time with entrepreneurs. They've got a vision for the future. They've got new ideas on how things can be improved, how lives can be improved, how our health can be improved. And so I think just a constant diet of entrepreneurial zeal, you know, will keep your head lifted up and focused on the sunny uplands. The other thing is, I think that gives Legatum hope is through our philanthropic activities. It's not just Legatum doing our own thing. We are collaborating with a very sort of broad tent of people in something like the Freedom Fund, for example. So the Freedom Fund has one mission: anti-slavery, anti-human trafficking. But the people that are involved in founding it, funding it, supporting it, promoting it, come from very diverse political viewpoints. So we've got very sort of left of center people, we've got very right of center people, but they can agree on one thing: slavery is bad, human trafficking is bad, and we can all get to work together on trying to solve that problem. And I love that, because to me, if we can find more opportunities to actually unify around something that holds us together, that maintains that cohesion, the better. And the same is with the End Fund and so many other things that we do. It's heartening to be able to interact with people who may not agree with you on anything else outside the room, but who on one cause that can lead to the betterment of people's lives can gather together and get great things done.
I want to ask final few questions about the Legatum Institute itself, your sort of think tank. What, and I don't want to preempt you here, but perhaps hopefully you'll give us an insight, but what are the Legatum Institute's future plans? Are there any reports you're putting out? What can we expect?
So something that we just released a few days ago is the Legatum Institute has shifted its focus just in the last year or so, and we have an incredible team that's leading the charge. It's a young team full of lots of energy and hungry to make a difference. One of the first marquee things that we've released is a paper on AUKUS. Now, AUKUS is a collaboration between Australia, the United Kingdom, and the U.S. And its first objective was to figure out how to develop and produce nuclear-powered submarines. And that's a fairly niche kind of objective. But on the back of that, what these nations found is that there's a huge scope for collaboration in terms of just information sharing, technology sharing, all sort of in the zone of war fighting, of being prepared for defending national security. But it's a great example of nations that share a common history, that share common values, coming together as sovereign independent nations, voluntarily sort of pooling their resources for the betterment of all the nations. Our report was looking at this dynamic and asking, why shouldn't other countries that have a similar profile, like Canada or like New Zealand, also join this pact? And the response that we got was incredible. So we had three former prime ministers endorse our paper. So you had Boris Johnson, you had Liz Truss, and Tony Abbott, former prime minister of Australia. That's really rare, and it's a lot of fun for a young team and for the Legatum Institute to have that level of support for one of its first papers in its sort of new incarnation. So I would anticipate that we'll do more things like that. We're going to release a new version of the Prosperity Index. We're working on it now, and it's going to be sort of fit for purpose for the modern sort of big data age. Our hope is that the Prosperity Index will evolve from something that was backwards looking. Like, if you looked at it previously, you would see, okay, Norway or Denmark is number one, and there's sort of the predictable group in the bottom quartile. But that's sort of old news. We want to reconfigure it and use AI, use big data, use machine learning to try to get this to be predictive and to tell us not who was prosperous last year, but next year, and who's on the rise. We think that'll be very, very useful for the countries, for political leadership, and even for the investment community.
I suspect that viewers will continue to see the Legatum, will see its influence in Britain throughout the coming years. So thank you so much, Mark, for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
Stephen, thank you. Great to be here.
Okay. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this show and are interested in hearing more episodes like it, please follow this podcast and drop us a review. If you have any suggestions of people you would like to be interviewed, you can let us know via the Apple Podcasts app.